Chapter 14. It has been 2 months. Shmi has been trying not to count the days, but she can't help it. If it's not her own calendar marking each and every day that passes, then it's the news. 2 galactic standard months since the Boon to Eve Classic. They still run Anakin's victory now and then when the news is slow, wondering about the next one. Wondering where the miraculous little human had gone after the historic victory. At least people have stopped approaching her about him. Stopped approaching Watto about buying him. There was a lot of money to be made with a slave of Anakin's abilities, and at least that would never happen now. Shmi marks the days on the calendar and sighed. Before the Boon to Eve Classic, it had been Anakin crossing out the days, and his marks are different. Wild little strokes, always in such a hurry. Hers seem mirthless and lifeless in comparison. Strange to think that his last mark upon her life would be a day crossed out. Her last day with him. Shmi runs a finger over the mark, then looks up. There's a clatter in the kitchen. C-3PO trying to clean up.
"Dreadfully sorry, mistress. It's these joints of mine,"
he says, flailing.
"Sand in the works again, I'm afraid. I'm all jittery."
"I'll clean you up after work, C-3PO," Shmi promises, and smiles, turning away from the calendar to look at him, valiantly trying to do his best. Well, maybe the day crossed out isn't all Annie left her with. Just be careful, all right?
"I'll do my utmost, mistress,"
the droid says, giving an almost affronted look at his own elbows. And with a shake of her head, Shmi collects her scarf by the door and then heads out. The shop is empty when she gets there. Not a surprise. Watto is more and more often late these days, sleeping in after long nights spent in the gaming halls, trying to swindle and gamble his fortune back. Shmi gives it a little thought, and instead moves to tidy up as much as she can, brushing away the daily accumulation of sand from the floors and counters, doing what little can be done to make the shop seem more appealing. It's more full of trash these days, and without Anakin tinkering with droid parts, it looks less and less functional. Shmi could fix up a droid and water vaporator, and tune up an engine same as Anakin, but she didn't have his knack for finding parts and putting them together into functional new holes. Half of the droids they've sold in the last 3 years or so, Anakin had made out of scrap parts. Watto has sold all of them now. Just as well that C-3PO doesn't have coverings and is near to useless. Watto would have sold him too, probably, if he was in actually sellable state. As it is right now, the protocol droid can't step out of the house without being damaged by Tatooine weather. Finished cleaning up, Shmi glances over the shop and then heads to the back, where one of Watto's few actual jobs have been laid out. A busted-up engine for a landspeeder. Like everything else on their planet, it's jammed with sand in the works. With nothing else to do and very little hope of customers, Shmi picks up the tools, puts on an apron, and sits down to work on it. She's wrist-deep in sandy engine oil when the front door opens, and going by the sound of heavy boots, it's not Watto who enters. "Welcome," Shmi calls. "I'll be with you in just a moment." Quickly cleaning her hands, she heads back to the front to see a young human man standing in the shop, considering the racks of parts and electronics. She can immediately tell he's not a local. His long hair is too dark a shade and his skin too pale, and his clothes aren't nearly dusty enough. There's also a smell like something wet. The man turns to look at her, scratching at his beard as he does. They tell me this place is owned by a Toydorian called Watto, the man says, in an accent that belongs somewhere in the core, not on Tatooine. Is that right?
That's right, yes. He's not in at the moment, but maybe I can help you? Shmi offers quickly. If you're looking for parts, or if it's an engine issue...
No, my ship is fine. Well, relatively fine, the man says, and looks her up and down. Are you Shmi Skywalker?
Shmi says, her heart skipping a beat. It's rarely a good thing when spacers know a slave by their name.
Yes?
The man nods and holds out his hand.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, he says, and glances around. Does Watto monitor your shop? Are customers recorded?
Her heart jumping to beat at double pace now, Shmi shakes her head weakly and accepts his hand. His grip is firm, but not tight enough to hurt. His skin is soft. Definitely not from around here.
Why? She asks worriedly.
Because from what I heard, your owner is a dick when it comes to selling stuff, Kenobi says, and shrugs, shoving his hands into his pockets. And I don't want to give him heads up.
Your kid, Anakin? He told me not to give him any chances to rack up your price, so...
Shmi feels a little like the air has gone all still around her. Even the wind outside has withered to nothing. Everything is just... stuck for a moment.
What?
She says, and then blinks.
Annie, you know my Annie?
Kenobi shrugs, awkward.
Yeah, I do,
he says, and clears his throat, looking away. So I am not exactly supposed to be here, and I don't have much time before I gotta be off, so I'll make this short and sweet. I'm here to buy you, that's the idea. Buy your freedom, that is. I don't exactly have money to do it, but I do have several tons of filtered water, some tons of fresh food, about a ton of frozen food and assorted other goods, a couple of crates of rations, so...
Struck utterly dumb, Shmi just stares at him.
Kenobi clears his throat, looking increasingly awkward.
Anakin told me that'd be enough if I found the right person to sell to.
And you'd know who to sell my shit to, he says, shifting his footing. And
I guess I am kind of assuming you want to be free?
Shmi's mouth works silently for a moment.
Yes,
she says, and her voice comes out more a weak wheeze than anything else.
But how? Why? Who are you? How do you know my boy? Why are you...
Kenobi shrugs.
You got a special kid. I had the pleasure of teaching him for a bit, he says, and looks away, smiling a little.
He's gonna go to some fucking places. He clears his throat.
We talked about you a lot while he was on my ship, and, apparently, by Tatooine standards, I'm rich. So.
Shaking her head in baffled amazement, Shmi tries to figure out what he's saying. What he isn't. If he has several tons of water he can just give up, then yes, he would be more than rich by Tatooine standards. But
are you a Jedi? She asks, a little helplessly. You're one of Annie's Jedi teachers?
That makes Kenobi smile.
Guess I am, he agrees, and gives a pleased little smile, like he's baffled by it, like he's honored by it.
Anyway, I got places to be and time's ticking. How much is Watto likely to ask for you, and who do I sell my stuff to?
Shmi feels a little like she's full of static electricity as she waits, behind the shop counter, utterly helpless. She pointed Kenobi to all potential buyers, ones that wouldn't try to take his cargo at gunpoint anyway. And now, all she can do is hope he's as good a haggler as he is an agent of chaos. Because, good grief, it feels like her life has been upturned in just one conversation. She is still a slave, and yet... Are all Jedi like this? They just come, they cause tumultuous changes, they breeze on by like a sandstorm that sweeps the landscape clean. Or is it Anakin? Does he have some sort of magnetism for the ones most likely to cause trouble? Oh, she hopes Kenobi wouldn't be swindled too badly. Tons of water and food could get him far, so long as he found the right buyers. Watto comes to the shop before Kenobi returns, and Shmi tries to pull herself together enough to do her job. He's in a bad mood. Last night's gambling had gone badly, it seems. Thankfully, Watto is not as cruel a master as some. He never takes his anger or bad moods out on her.
I am vexed today, he announces, flapping on by. Vexed! I'll be in the back. Don't bother me, not unless there's money to be made.
Yes, Watto, Shmi says quietly, looking down. And Watto goes, muttering to himself. Soon after, there's the banging of metal on metal coming from the back, and Shmi wonders if the engine would end up a loss after all. She sits as though on stones heated under the double noon, anxious energy burning away inside her, until finally, just past the double noon, Kenobi returns. He meets her eyes, opens his mouth, and Shmi shakes her head, nodding to the back. Watto, she mouths, and squeezes her fingers together nervously. She can't even ask how much he made, if he made enough. He's young, now that she really looks at him. Young, not green, but fresh in a way only people from Korwalds can afford to be at his age. Tatooine chews people like him up, and rarely chews them up. Had he made enough? Had he been clever enough? He was a Jedi like Qui-Gon Jinn, and he'd been devilishly clever, but... Kenobi considers her, rocking back and forth on the balls of his feet as he thinks, and then he turns to the back. Shmi smothers an alarmed noise as he just marches on past the counter and to the back, calling, "Hello there!" With the kind of outrageous confidence Shmi knows for sure will rub Watto the wrong way.
What is this?" Watto demands,
as Shmi jumps to her feet and hurries after Kenobi.
"What are you doing back here? This is for employees only."
"I'm sorry, Watto. He just walked past me," Shmi starts to say, hoping to smooth the insult before it will put Watto on the defensive.
"I got money burning in my pocket and a ship that needs repair. Heard you got a slave who can do engines," Kenobi says, "and I don't have much time to haggle."
And then he just names a price. The very price she gave him. Shmi almost squeaks in horror. "That is not how you do business on Tatooine."
"Oh?"
Watto asks, his nose twitching as he leaps to his wings to take a closer look at Kenobi.
"In a hurry, are we? Well, Shmi here knows her way around engines, all right. But she's worth more than that."
Is about as far as he gets.
"I don't have the time. Take it or leave it,"
Kenobi says flatly.
"Come now, my friend, let's discuss it."
"Fine, I'll ask someone else." Kenobi turns to leave.
Wait,
Watto says quickly. And as Shmi watches, he chases after Kenobi.
Let's discuss it. What kind of ship you have, then? What kind of work you need her for?"
What follows is not so much haggling as it is
Kenobi ramming through the whole discussion like a rampaging bantha, just trundling over all of Watto's attempts to engage in haggling. Kenobi named his price, and he sticks to it, until Watto gets the idea and his nose is twitching, gets a whole new vigor. It's not an inconsiderable amount of money, especially with Watto's current finances. And it is about how much Watto would expect to get for her, even through proper haggling. To Watto's credit, he does give her a look, almost worried, almost sorry, before he says, Aye, we have a deal, and they shake on it. Maybe it's a Jedi thing, Shmi thinks, in something like horrified wonder. Qui-Gon Jinn gambled over Anakin's freedom and won. Obi-Wan Kenobi verbally raised through a haggling over hers. Maybe Jedi just don't do business normally. Shmi wonders quietly if Anakin felt the same as she does, following her master, freer, the embodiment of all hope, out of the shop. I don't understand, she admits quietly. But thank you. What will happen now? Well, there's options, Kenobi says, stopping outside Watto's store. I got a spare bed or two on my ship. Can't offer you payment, but I can feed you, water you, keep you in comfort, and probably eventually we will run into something better for you. Plus, I got Qui-Gon's calm, and I'm thinking Anakin will want to talk with you. If that doesn't suit you... No, please, it suits me perfectly, Shmi assures him quickly. Please, yes, I swear I won't be a bother. I'll help you in your work, whatever it is. Kenobi clears his throat. Skywalker, Shmi, don't make decisions until you know your options, he says. There are other options, okay? How about we run through all of them before you throw your lot in with me? But you know Annie, Shmi says, shaking her head. What other choice is there? Oh boy, Kenobi says, and gives her a wry look. Okay, how about we get the chip out of you, and then we have a good long talk about your options, okay? And trust me, lady, you got options. Now, come on, he says. I bet you know a good clinic hereabouts that can do the operation, right? It will cost money, Shmi says, a little shy now. Well, good for us. It turns out I'm kind of rich, Kenobi says with a snort. Come on. Within the hour, the chip is gone, and her slave contract is finally broken. Of course, in Tatooine, that might not mean anything. Not all slaves have chips, and not all slaves are even called slaves. Indentured servitude is as good as in a world like theirs. But with a promise out of here, and a chance to talk with Anakin again, it's all so much. And so suddenly, it feels like the whole world is spinning. But for the first time in a long time, Shmi dares to hope. She takes Kenobi to her home, shows him C-3PO, and makes a good show of listening to his other options. There are several worlds that rehabilitate former victims of sentient trafficking, it turns out, helping them onto new lives, new occupations. Anakin had apparently prepared a list of them. I mean, it was for an essay I had him do, Kenobi says, offhand. Like that makes any sense at all. Shmi tries not to bounce in her seat, full of eager energy now. I want to go with you. I'll work for you, for food, she says. I just want to talk to Anakin. Please. I would get you in touch with him either way, Kenobi assures her. You don't have to work for me. You don't even know what I do. You teach Anakin. You came here for him. You sold your cargo for me, Shmi says. I think I know enough. Kenobi gives her a sort of hapless look and then sighs. Oh, boy, he says. Well, okay. I guess we can take it for a test drive. I really wasn't kidding about being in a hurry, though. I got an assignment waiting for me, so guess we better get going, then. I don't have much to pack, Shmi assures him, and quickly stands up. I won't take long, but there's C-3PO. Can I bring him with us? Kenobi gives the skeleton of a droid a dubious look. He's going to need some wrapping, he comments, scratching at his beard. Yes, the sand, Shmi agrees with a sigh, and moves towards Anakin's room. I have some wrappings I can use, cover him up with. He's going to rust right through my ship, Kenobi muses fatalistically. Rust? Shmi pauses at the hatch, gaping at the greenery spilling over the cargo bay. There's plants growing on Kenobi's ship, all over it, climbing over the walls. The man himself is talking to a rather mangled-looking battle droid. This is Shmi Skywalker, he is saying. She's a guest. Don't do anything to her.
More guests, sir? What is this, a passenger yacht now? The standards around this place, I swear.
The droid trails away, giving a dubious look to C-3PO.
What about that one? Looks like you could knock him over with a cough.
Well, I never,
C-3PO gasps from amidst the cloth wrap. Here's Shmi's droid. Don't do anything to him either, all right, T-334? Kenobi asks, and then looks towards Shmi. All right then, ma'am? Plants, she says weakly. The Jedi sighs. Yeah, it's gotten a bit much, hasn't it? He mutters, while wrangling the battle droid back into her charging station. Blame Anakin and Qui-Gon. Your kid is mad strong, and Qui-Gon's a damn prodigy of the living force. Now, come on, I'll show you to your room. Shmi begins to say, and then realizes she has no idea what she could even say, and ends up just following him as he trundles past her, boots heavy on the metal crating. Out of the cargo bay and into the living areas, it's even worse. It's like how she imagines stepping into a forest might feel like. Shmi can't even see the walls, there's so many plants. Right, so, Kenobi says, and draws a breath. So, I will have to check you for allergies and illnesses and whatnot, and I am guessing you don't have your vaccinations either. Either way, don't touch anything. Especially not that. He points to a plant. Over half the galaxy is allergic to it.
Oh, okay, Shmi says weakly. I won't, I promise.
Kenobi glances at her. Good. I will show you what's what and where, but, he hums. If you're anything like your kid, I bet you want to see the dining room first, huh?
Why?
Because fish, Kenobi says, and motions her and C-3PO to follow him. And then she sees them. The enormous tanks of water, with colorful rock formations inside them, bubbles rising from amidst them while dozens of colorful little fish flitter about the formations, their scales glistening under light coming from above. Shmi gasps and drops everything she's holding and, like in a dream, wanders over to take a closer look. Utterly breathless at the sight of so much water, and in such a beautiful package. It's unlike anything she's ever seen before. Like a fresh breeze and a cool morning dew, crystallized and given physical form, except so much better. It's beautiful, Shmi whispers, her eyes tearing up. Kenobi hums with a smile and gives her a look.
Yeah,
he agrees with a slow, satisfied sigh.
It really is, isn't it?
Shmi swallows, watching the fish flitter about the tanks. Repurposed back to tanks, she thinks. There must be, oh, several tens of thousands of liters of water. No wonder he had enough water to sell just to buy her. Is all of this yours? Shmi asks, turning to look at him. She'd always thought Jedi lived humbly. What kind of Jedi has this kind of wealth?
Yup, it's all mine,
Kenobi agrees, folding his arms and looking at her.
So, you want to learn how it works?
The end. Author's notes. And so I shall call this finished. Now, I'd tell you what will happen next, except I kind of want to do a sequel instead. Hope the ending wasn't too abrupt. It could have gone on for longer, but I think the essentials already got covered. And trying to write about Obi-Wan conducting Qui-Gon to the wonderful world of academia is a bit beyond my own education. Needless to say, lessons were learned on all sides. Thank you for reading and reviewing, and I hope you enjoyed my indulgence of ponics. Reader's notes. So, this podfic was a labor of time management, mass fuckery, effort, love, bewilderment, joy, whatever you want to call it. It is literally 8 hours and counting down until the ITPE 2023 window closes, and I am only just finishing chapters 5 through 14. I was in Florida. I was literally in Disney World. We went on the Living with the Land Glimmering Greenhouses twice, which is a significant portion of that, for those who are not Disney-files, is the aquaponics, hydroponics, aeroponics, nutrient film techniques, and growing in sand, which I forget what the word is for that. And they do things like, basically, here are the many ways you can grow foods that are not the traditional American farming dream kind of deal, right? And there's a whole thing about, here is straight up our aquaculture, we have got fish growing, here is our aquaponics combo, six-tier fish plant sitch. Here is the aeroponics rotating and the aeroponics lifting. They've got like sheets that are on a rotating thing, and then they've got like literally hanging Brussels sprouts that run through a conveyor belt, essentially, of spritzers and air. And then they've got a whole bunch of stuff that was just like, I was reading this and I was, I know this part. I saw this. And not entirely sure what I'm doing with the cover art yet because I have 8 whole hours, but it's possible I'm going to use a picture from my ride view of the Living with the Land from pre-Christmas decorations, so it's not all lit up, because I think that would be fantastic and just in keeping with this. This podfic was recorded as an ITPE 2023 gift for Katana Fox Girl because I creeped on your bookmarks and this was perfect. This was like the moment of intersection of what you like and what I like, and this was sort of kind of on my bookmarks of things to do. This is the big one. Depending on what order you listen to things, this is the big one that I meant, and the other one is also good too, so you should listen to that as well. Anyway, for those of you who are not Katana Fox Girl, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Isama for having blanket permission to podfic. Yeah, I did the first 4 chapters in one sitting, and then I did the last 10 chapters in a several hours single sitting after literally being up since 4 a.m. for my flight home from Florida. So the voices may not be entirely consistent, but I've decided that all of the times where Obi-Wan sounds like he's slightly a leprechaun only happen when he is drunk, and so he's letting his guard down, or super, super comfortable, so he is, again, letting his guard down. Because I did have, like, a little bit of a, how does, while I was recording this, when I first started, I was trying to figure out what his voice accent, like, should be, because Obi-Wan was raised early days in the temple, so he would have had a Coruscant core accent, but then the rest of his life has been out, completely out from under the temple with a mishmash of people to the point where, like, he's picking up accents from wherever he might be, question mark, picking up accents from wherever he's stationed, or is he picking up, like, a spacer's thing? Does the Agri-Corps have their own slight accent? And then I decided, it doesn't matter what he actually sounds like, when Obi-Wan sees Qui-Gon, he's going to fall back into old habits, and he's like not even going to fully be aware of the fact that he is doing, this is my childhood core voice. Like, he's going to be not exactly code switching, but, like, I put a lot of thought into this after the fact when I realized that I could not maintain a Obi-Wan voice for any consistency. So I put thought into it after the fact of, like, when his guard is down, when he is relaxed, when he is with, like, the more comfortable he gets, the more he knows you, he lets it down a little bit and the other variations of his voice comes out. But, like, when he first meets Qui-Gon and when he first is interacting with the Jedi High Council, he puts on the, this is my childhood proper pronunciation kind of thing. He talks more formally and slowly. I don't know if that actually comes across or if it does sound like I don't know how to hold an accent, because that works too. But that was the thought I put into it after the fact. There is technically, it does exist. There is a sequel. It is called In the Field by Isama. I have not podficked it. Right now there's only one chapter. If you want to go read that after you've listened to this podfic, the summary for In the Field is scenes of the Clone Wars, where Obi-Wan is a member of the Jedi Agri-Corps, Anakin is a knight dedicated to fighting slavery, and things get off to a different start. So, like, the vibes, man. The vibes. Also, my recording setup was a little bit different. I'm doing this on my Samson Meteor mic. I am not doing it on the internal mic of my laptop, and I don't know. I have been having situational pod block for, like, the last dozen months, and we are trying to shake things up in the house of Rena Jenkins to see what, if other setups work better to get me recording. It might just be a time management process problem, but it might be a little bit like, reevaluate your setup so that you don't have the hurdles of setting up. And I mean, it worked a little bit because I recorded this whole thing. Yay! So we'll see what sticks in the new year. Anyway, happy ITPE to Katana Foxgirl. Happy ITPE and having blanket permission to Isama. And happy ITPE to everyone else who is listening. Thank you for sticking around for this whole thing. I hope you enjoyed it and have a nice day.